protect your boats and recreational vehicles with FBP RV and Marine antifreeze. It has burst-proof protection down to negative 50 degrees, keeping you protected against freezing temperatures. Keep your winter worry-free with FBP ready-to-use RV and Marine antifreeze now at Menards. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com and shop our great selection of automotive products. Save big money at Menards.
Hello, welcome to the Let's Get Running podcast. How is the Caramel Kid?
Caramel Kid is good. What has Sean been doing?
I'm trying to think what I've been doing. I'm looking forward to the beginning of the World Cup. I didn't watch yesterday's game with the Russians, but I am looking forward to tonight's game with the Spanish team, who I put a bet on just before they sacked their manager, and Portugal.
who did you put your bet with? You know, bookies are giving people their money back.
Are they?
Bet on Spain.
A bit of Betfair. They sound like a good people to be betting with, so hopefully they might be able to do that. But I've also bet on Luis Suarez, the biter, to be top scorer, and that's looking like a lovely bet.
Me too.
Because look at Saudi Arabia, they can't defend for their lives. He's going to score about 40 goals in that game, so yeah, should be good. Him or Cavani? Cavani's my other one.
What odds did you get?
25. To one.
Okay, I've got 22 to 1. I put £20 down.
Nice.
Suarez.
Nice one. Yeah, I think he's going to be the number one, which should be good. So, if it comes in, we're both going to be laughing, which is good. So, hey, what have you been up to? You been busy?
I'm obviously driving the buses, drama as usual. If it's not with customers, it's with other drivers. So, I'm walking into work, so I'm standby. Standbys are like, you've got to come in, but you don't have a job. And right. You wait there for 8 hours, just in case a driver blows out his job, then you have to take his job. So they always have standbys for every day, because basically the bus has got to leave the garage.
Right.
So I'm coming in for standby, and then you've got a guy that checks all the buses coming out, the yard man.
Yeah.
And he's a young guy. I'm talking to him. He goes gym. He's telling me about his 17-inch half biceps. So he measures his biceps.
Right, okay. This guy's really weird. Yeah.
Right. So I'm like... And he's looking at my arms going, what loads of bit of strings hanging out your t-shirt? I was like, don't worry about that. I says, I use my legs. So I go in and they call me. So they say, oh, Mr. Mays, come to the counter.
Yeah.
So I'm strolling to the counter, and then they call my name again. I said, bloody hell, they're in a rush.
Yeah.
And when I get there, the man gives me a duty. He says, do this duty. So I look at it and it said the bus, it was 12 o'clock and the bus leaves at 18 minutes past 12.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, I've got ages. It only takes me 5 minutes to walk and get the bus.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to another driver, and the guy behind the counter was going, go on, go, go. And I was thinking, why is he being so pushy? So I was like, bloody hell. So as I'm walking out the reception, a driver comes running in and grabs me. And I'm thinking he's mucking around.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like messing around. If people don't know me, I'm like touchy-feely, yeah?
Yeah.
And then he starts getting serious, and he's trying to grab the duty card out of my hand, and I'm like, what are you doing? This is my job. He goes, no, give it back to me. And he's snatching it, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, really dead serious.
Yeah.
And then everyone's quiet looking at us, thinking, what's going on? So I let him have it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he goes, this is my job, and runs off. So basically the guy was running late, and the guy behind the counter has got a grudge against him.
Right.
Yeah, so he was like 2 minutes late. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the guy behind the counter was trying to give his job away.
Oh,
so that's why the guy's trying to fight me for the duty. And I just said, I ain't getting into a fight over a duty. I said, that ain't even mine.
Yeah.
And then the guy behind the counter, he's like head receptionist, and he's fuming now. He says, Mr. Mace, go and get that bus. He says, do not come back here. He says, I want you to drive that bus. I was like, what? I was like, I ain't getting beat up over driving a bus. He goes, oh, I says, well, if I go, I said, there's two drivers. I said, there's one seat. I said, how's that going to work? Yeah. So I says, when I get there and he's in the seat, what do you want to do? I says, I don't fight. I says, we ain't fighting. He says, take the yard man. Obviously, yard man, big arms. I was like, okay, we take the yard man.
Yeah.
So me and the yard man go, so he's coming over there, his big arms, right?
Yeah.
We get to the bus, and the guy is obviously panicking, checking his bus. and he's obviously upset. And then even the guy with big arms is like, yeah, you can't take this bus out. You've been stood down on your job. He yeah. says, you have to come and make me get out of this bus. I was like, I looked at him and I said, that's all yours. Because I said, I'm going back. I said, I'm going back.
So and what then, happened? Did you have to do it in the end?
And then like, basically I calmed down the situation and said, look, I said, he's not late for the bus because the bus was still due out. It had 5 minutes to due out. So yeah. the company weren't going to lose any money.
Yeah.
I said, basically the problem was he's coming 2 minutes late and the guy behind the counter has got a grudge against him. So I said, that's nothing to do with company stuff. I said, that's personal.
Yeah. And you left. So I said,
no one's done anything wrong.
Yeah.
So everyone was looking at each other, said, yeah. So I walked back, the controller walked back, and the driver took the bus.
Yeah.
The only problem is when we got to the receptionist was pissed. And I was like, please, I ain't fine. Yeah. And then my job, that job was supposed to go over the time that I was supposed to leave. So I was supposed to leave at like 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
And that job went to 3.
Yeah.
But because I didn't do that job, he says, he's really upset. He said, you might as well go home. So I ended up going home 2 hours early, or I could have got punched in the face and then drive the bus for an extra hour.
Perfect. The perfect scenario. The mediator always wins, Jermaine.
You got to be a good talker, yeah.
You've got to take the fight. You've got to take the anger out of a situation. Nice work. Well, we got a good interview today. Our show today is about training the mind. So we all train our bodies. We all go out and we run hard every day or every couple of days or whatever it is you're doing. But we don't really think about training the mind. And I know we talk a little bit about, but with all the athletes we interview, we talk a little bit about how their mental approach can differ to different races. But we're actually going to talk directly to a psychologist. We're talking to Andy Lane, Professor Andy Lane. And he's going to talk to us about his work and give us some tips and hints on how we can train ourselves and improve our mental toughness. So here we go.
Did you do anything?
Okay.
Whoa. Did you do anything to train your mind?
Me, I started doing an app, it's very American, and it's like you listen to it. It's a bit like Headspace, right? So it kind of gives you various training sessions, but basically it's about like meditating, really. So you concentrate on your breathing and you start to visualize races. Because I've never done it before, and because I train a lot on my own. If you're training in a group, it's different because you're dealing with different situations, and it's quite easy to get to work off other people around you and to get ideas from other people. When you're on your own, it's good to have like a resource like that, like an app, a training app, mental training stuff. I think it's quite good. I think it's worth trying out. We'll listen to what Andy has to say about some different tactics and things you can do to improve. But I think I'm quite enjoying trying the app when I can fit it in, and it's given me a bit of a different perspective on a few different kind of my running and how I can improve as a runner. So yes, highly recommend it.
Did you chop your hair so you could fit all this in your headspace?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was too heavy. It was taking up valuable space. Yeah, so I got rid of it. Excellent. Here we go. We're going to start the interview with Andy. Hello, this week we are talking to Andy Lane, Professor Andy Lane, from the University of Wolverhampton. You're a sports psychologist there, Andy. How are you doing?
No, I am really well. Friday and all is well. Sunshine in the Midlands.
So, excellent. Fantastic. So your role in at the university, obviously you're working across, presumably working across a range of sports. What does it entail? What's your sort of day-to-day job look like?
Okay, well, I'm the Associate Dean for Research in the Faculty of Education, Health and Wellbeing, and I'm managing research for sports, education, health, social work, and psychology. So, in essence, it's research management. Drilling down from that is sports psychology. So I have a number of sport PhD students who are doing we'll get to that in this talk, hopefully, some interesting work on psychology of endurance performance, and then moving down from that, some degree of teaching on the various programs we've got here.
Excellent. And you're a runner yourself. How did you originally get stuck in with the running?
Well, I am a runner. I started running because I was a boxer and I used to run to keep fit. And the competitive running was done at the end of the year. I used to live in Ware, a place in Ware's Ware, a place in Hertfordshire.
Yeah.
They had a 10-miler. So each year I used to do the Ware 10 miles. And kind of this is kind of indicative of my running. The first year I did it, I did just over the hour.
Yeah.
And then from the next 6 years, it took me goes at that to try and get under the hour. And eventually, I did get under the hour. So I start running from that. And then when I stopped boxing, we started doing more running races. My wife to be was running. We did triathlons.
Yeah.
We've kind of kept running throughout that. Although there was a period in the middle where, when my children came along, which coincided with an injury and coincided with both of us losing out of the habit, where our running dropped in its intensity as my size grew.
Right. What is it that motivates you to run then at the moment?
Multiple. I mean, I went for a run this morning, beautiful run around about 7 o'clock. I had to listen to some of the podcasts for this show to tune in what I'm going to say. But you go running around, I go around Lichfield Cathedral near that in the background in the park. Fabulous way to start the day. And, and for anybody to get outside in the sunshine, to move, not to kill themselves, the intensity is brilliant. And so one reason, when I've been injured with broken foot or sore knee, as I have a little bit now, that when you can't go outside and run, it's really, you notice it in your mindset and your mood. So it's mood management for one. Yeah. And I enjoy competition. I like going in to go races as often as possible and competing against other people. And so, that what running does is provide a context where I can do that.
Yeah, excellent. And you said about the sort of the milestone of the 60-minute 10-miler. Mm-hmm. Do you have another one at the moment? Have you got another time goal you want to break in upcoming races?
This is quite funny. In my history of running, I wanted to do a marathon under 3 hours, and that only took me 25 years to do. When we started doing park run, I did 1804, 1805, and it took me, I think, 85 goes to get over under 18.
Yeah.
Currently the goal is to ensure I have stability of my knee so I can run and so I can do sessions where I can really work hard and not worry the next day my knee's going to be in agony. This goal for this year would be to get my partner under 19 minutes. I suppose that's realistic and be really consistent. It's a holding goal, really.
Yeah.
What I want to do is get.
What is the problem with your knee, Andy?
I've got arthritis. So I am getting on a bit. I suppose kind of makes some sense, age related. It's just you can control that to a point by getting good stability around your hips and around your movement. So I've been working on to get that so I can move pain free, and that's really the plan, and not to overcook it too much. And do you say that? I have run two marathons this year. I ran one with my wife. My wife and I this year ran the Boston Marathon.
Nice. Have you run London too? How do you compare the two?
Huh?
Oh, Boston and Lincolnshire.
Boston and Lincolnshire. Yeah, Boston and Lincolnshire. Which is the flattest marathon you'll ever, ever go into.
Really? So you're a Boston qualifier? Of some kind,
yeah. You're in Boston, just enter the Boston Marathon, you qualify. Yeah.
And do you think, you talked about kind of it being good for your mind, the running. Do you use it as an opportunity to practice certain, I don't know, theories or practices, or do you just use it as a chance to just completely unwind from the day, your sort of daily to day work?
For all of the applied work we do, and the experiments we run is, I always practice them on me. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The idea that you're going to say to someone, when the run gets hard, and it might be to get a rhythm that helps you be able to perform economically and smoothly. We practice. You live and breathe what you advise. So, for all the techniques I advise athletes, I have been tried on myself hugely, and an understanding of what works for you. works for you.
You're the guinea pig.
We're doing experiments as well where, you know, in runners and cyclists can be in a race and they'll get to the 3 mile point and they'll find out the feedback being that they're slower than their goal, and that can really demotivate. And so we've done experiments where we've hidden feedback where they are, but we've then told them where they are, so they react. So if the goal was to do 3 miles in 18 minutes, they get to 3 miles, we'll tell them that they're at 18:20, so they're behind their goal, to annoy them, to intentionally annoy them, and look at how that how they respond to that physically, physiologically and psychologically. And we also tell them when they're, we falsely indicate that they're above, they're faster than their goal.
Yeah.
And watch them as well.
Yeah.
And you get remarkable results. Because
when you're doing those tests, how do you measure that? So say they're running around the track and they got a complete 10 laps and you say 5 laps they're down. Mm. Do you then measure to see if they pick it up or slow down?
Oh, no, we do it on the treadmill. Okay. We do it on a bike. You can monitor ongoing physiology much easier, and you can ask questions much easier to how they're thinking and feeling.
Yeah.
What you're looking for, what happens or what has happened when people are behind their goal, is that their behaviour gets a bit more erratic, that they start trying to increase it and going faster and not being able to sustain that. And the oxygen amount of the oxygen, they start working harder, so all the physical, you know, greater physiological disturbance, and the psychological factor is massive. So angry, unhappy, and pushing hard, but it's not good enough. But when we give them false positive,
yeah,
they're relaxed, a bit more economical, more positive in their mind, more kind to them in their inner language. But actually, they are running the same speed in both. That's the point where we disclose them at the end.
Yeah.
They weren't going to have different speed. Exactly the same performance between the two of them. In one of them, you chastise yourself, you had nothing left at the end, and it was really hard. In the other one, there's headroom for performance.
So, you know, you said they run the same time, even though you give them false and positive information. But at some stage later down the line, they start getting slower. Okay. Which one comes quicker, depending on what information you've given them?
Or are you saying, what's the performance in the second half of the test as a result of that?
Well, we haven't done tests long enough to force the drop-off.
Right, okay.
In both, when they get near the end, there is... You know, there is that increase in intensity to push through the final part. But in the second part of all the tests we've done, that when it's negative, it declines more. But you get the erratic bursts of trying to be positive.
Okay.
Trying to improve performance back onto the goal, which makes it really, really difficult.
Yeah.
Eventually you'd get the performance drop off because they would, they'd be exhausted.
Yeah.
The massive part to us is the headroom for better performance when it's positive, because there is no difference in performance. And then the other part to that is how can we teach people to be able to access ways of performing better under that increased intent in that intense physiological state where they're going pretty much as hard as possible, but they're quite positive about it.
Yeah. And is this the research you're working on at the moment, the RESIST research?
The RESIST research is, in essence, that is a RESIST research is a really nice project put together by Carla Mayen now at St Mary's. It's brought together a load of experts in endurance performance together, and as part of that is, why do people stop? And what we're doing in this project is to try and develop interventions which are available to people to be able to try to use. So it does relate to that, and it does relate to that. Exactly, yeah, and we've got some really nice people in that from the academic.
So you try to get to people why you want to know why they stop running completely or stop whilst they're running?
Well, we want to know, not stop whilst they're running. I have a goal to run, say, 10 miles in 90 minutes, and at some point some people can either abandon that goal or abandon that race or thought right. to stop. And it's the thoughts, it's not that they actually stop, it's the thoughts of stopping that are the interesting part, and how the fatigue that's coming back alters the goal that they're going towards, and how they negotiate themselves either to stick to it or they negotiate, or the consequences is that they abandon it, and that abandonment is either grossly slowing down, some walking, and all those thoughts, and all the, I mean, the survey we put out was just to try and unpack what goes on within that, so that when those thoughts come, we will have, people can have some strategies in which to overcome them. There's a kind of inevitability about this, in that if you run for fast enough, for long enough, your body goes, actually, we can't cope with this. And that comes at whatever level you're at. So if good, faster runners will be going faster when those thoughts come in. But there is this point that the body tells the brain, you better slow down a bit now, because we're not sure you can keep this going. Brain then goes, well, I've got a goal here to run this quick, so I'm actually going to try and ignore you. And those two then become in conflict. Whilst the goal you're going is important, saying that I'm going to get this time, irrespective of what you're telling me, body, you can overcome it. But there is a negotiated battle, and I think it manifests itself in people's minds with saying, you better slow down, you can't cope with this, you might keel over, and all the thoughts that can come in that make it very difficult, of which we're trying to help people either set goals which don't, where those thoughts don't come, so that they can enjoy the run at a pace which they feel happy with and not experience that, or be better at defending themselves against those negative thoughts.
How do you, in terms of this research, how do you look at that in a clinical perspective? Then are you getting people on the treadmill and putting in situations where that could be these thoughts start to come into their head? How do you look at that in clinic?
Okay, this is Dan Robinson's PhD in essence. Is we're going to get people to, we'll test them for their, their physiological capacity to some degree, so that when we get them to run for a certain distance at a certain intensity, so knowing that if you run at this intensity, it's going to be hard enough to be able to trigger thoughts that you might not be able to keep this going. Get baseline scores so that we know what the typical response is in terms of physiological and psychological capacity is. And then teach people interventions in order to try and get them to go faster. In other words, but to go faster and to get more out of themselves for less effort. Right. It might well be that the effect of the intervention might be that they can go at the same speed, but in the early stages, that just feels a lot easier. And then it's teaching them ways to actually get quicker. I mean, a key bit of all this, and which is another nice group we've got going, is the role of placebo or belief. That if you believe your treatment is going to work, that is an active agent to make helping it work. So if you're given psychological advice or any sort of advice or any ergogenic aid and you strongly believe in it, there's a good chance that explains quite a bit of the improvement. So we'll have to have conditions which are where we activate the belief, but the actual content of the intervention is not so reliable, in order to tease out what is a belief effect from what is about the mechanisms for what the changes are.
Yeah,
quite interesting, because what would be quite quite like the idea of people or runners having process goals, thinking on the rhythm of what they're doing, getting an image in their mind which describes really efficient technique as a way to overcome difficult sensations of fatigue. And that therefore we're specifying the mechanisms through why that might occur. But in order to, the scientists coming out of me here, is that in order to test whether that's actually true, we need to set up an experiment that puts it to the sword.
Okay.
And run the risk that it doesn't work. But in running that risk that it doesn't work, we uncover a whole series of probably different counter mechanisms that athletes have that we're not really aware of, which will open up the avenue for, do they apply to other people?
Yeah, obviously you're looking for people to support in the study. How can people get involved with that?
Starting point one would be to go to the RESIST website and just register interest. Go to the questionnaire, which is online, and fill that in, and we will be coming back with them to try and bring them to an event. To showcase and explain the results. And the intention of it is to make a difference so that runners, anyone in their sport, find some benefits of this. And what we're doing over the summer with Dan Robinson and the Wolves, we'll have an event to invite the public to, which sort of showcases the work. put Dan's website up as well, which allows people to come and do some testing at Walls and get some specific feedback within Dan's work. And most of the work on the Resist project is going as a starter point, so athletes can grab it for free. And a mass of my work is out there for free in terms of your general guidelines.
Yeah.
I mean, for most people working with a sports psychologist, they could start off by really going off and reading all this stuff and thinking how it applies to them. And at the latter stages, go and have it tuned into their specifics.
Yeah.
People are different. And my role is always easier when someone's reasonably well read around the sort of stuff they need to.
Yeah.
All I do is fine tune what they've been starting.
And you talked about kind of the interventions to enable people to focus and to, yeah, I don't know, win this conflict with their body, with the mind and the body. Do you have any kind of simple strategies you think help in terms of someone, if someone's struggling in a marathon or someone's starting to struggle? Do you personally have any kind of easy things for people to take away?
In a marathon, in a marathon typically depends on what the difficult bits always come, are almost always come at the back end.
Yeah.
I mean, the training for a marathon is always best is to learn to learn what that fatigue's going to be like. And so some of the sessions where they do longer runs is to do some hard to faster stuff at the back end,
right,
so that you can condition your mind to what it likes to be, where you're trying to push quite hard, but you're actually quite fatigued, and not be worried that if you run your first 15 miler, then you do 10 times 200 meter sprints, or 10, not sprints, but strides, and you'll do three and you'll go, I can't do four.
Yeah.
But then playing with that thought, going, well, I actually can do another one, and there can be 50 meter strides, but the idea is every time you have to start again and push quite hard, you have to talk your way into pushing quite hard.
Right.
And you can listen to that inner dialogue that's saying, well, maybe this is enough today. Maybe I don't need to do this. Maybe I'll, all the maybes, condition yourself in so that you actually overcome those negative thoughts. You might want to get a strategy, so it might well be that you want to have some self-talk, which says just relax your arms, just put one foot in front of the other, be as smooth as possible. It might be technical based, this is usually quite useful, just run tall, put the balloon in your head and try and get so good form.
Yeah.
It might be one of the things I like, is to try and get an image of smooth running, so you get an image of things turning around in your head and playing that round. And so it works very well with cyclists, is the image of steam train pistons going round with your foot as the piston. Just see that see those wheels turning round as an immovable force. You get those in your mind.
Yeah.
And then a really easy one which people can use, and I know this is very popular, is use music to help them get into, use the rhythm of music to condition the running speed.
Yeah.
So if you want to do 6 threes hard, Iron Maiden on.
Yeah, but you can't. Elite runners can't use music when they race.
They can't use it in their race, but they can use it in training.
Yeah.
To condition, to help them to distract from the thoughts that are going in their
head. And isn't that kind of because in training they're not doing what they're going to happen in a race, so in training they've got the music to motivate them, but when they do the race they don't have it?
Yeah.
So it's not going to be the same sort of like conditions, is it?
No, of course not. But the what you want is that you have a range of different strategies that you know you can use in order to lead to the same end point in your mind, is that says that I can overcome this negative self-talk that says I need to stop. And whether you're actually putting the music on or you're playing the music in your head as a strategy to play through the music, to get yourself in the rhythm of what you're doing, then it doesn't necessarily matter. With elite runners, though, the other part is, and where you're elite, you're not running against time necessarily, you're really running against other people. There's a lot more strategies around using the pace of others, learning to synchronize your legs into their legs. The idea that putting a mental loop on them, holding in them, being really conscious of how when one person passes you, the effects on your emotions and thoughts that has, and whether it's going to be very negative, because subconsciously being passed when you're tired is just so negative. But being aware that that's going to come, you can get your, protect yourself a little bit through those consequences by saying, yeah, that's okay for now. This is not a point where I'm going to push. I'm going to leave for a minute or two and go and pick it up a bit later. I mean, interestingly, I listened to an interview with Steve Way, who did Comrades, who was going through with the elite runners at Comrades, and Steve came third.
Yeah.
Where he talked about he struggled with the pace and it was too early and it was too fast, and but he didn't want to consciously tell the others he was too tired. So the strategy, and I think this is great, he went for a wee. He went for a wee. He let them get 100 metres ahead and then picked it up, picked it back up. And in a huge, great race like Comrades,
yeah,
there will be bits when the others are dipping. But that bit of, well, I'm not going to show you I'm tired and I'm going to take a distracted strategy by just stopping, going for a wee. Beautiful way of keeping self-esteem reasonably high.
I remember when Mo Farah, was it in, I can't remember which big race it was, but it was a slow pace. It wasn't particularly warm, and Farah just had, he jogged over and took a drink in the middle of the 10,000 metres. It was, and it seemed like he was just doing it just to say, this is mine. I can just basically do this on my own time. I can relax. Interesting thought. So you mentioned about, I like the idea of the thinking about your competitors in a race situation. You said about looping, putting a mental loop around them. So just trying to, is that, how would you do that in practice? So you're thinking about almost like you're connected to that person and you can't let them go.
Yeah, exactly. And certainly in training groups, it works quite well. You just decide who your marker is.
Yeah.
And stick with them regardless.
Yeah.
And you can sink in to, I mean, you can sink your legs into their legs, so you can watch their running style.
Yeah.
And you decide when they put their left foot, yours is going with it.
Okay.
You just concentrate on what their legs are doing.
Yeah. But what if they're short like Sean and tall like me? How does that work?
You pick someone for the right height, don't you?
Yeah.
I know what you mean.
And one thing I'm quite interested in is what I've taken from the various things that you said here is putting yourself into these various situations where you are thinking about your mind and how it acts. So would you kind of almost suggest that some sessions you don't push as hard? Like most sessions for me is go out and I want to run as hard as I can each rep. Mm. I want to make each rep work because I want to train my body to do these things and to succeed. Yeah. I guess what you're suggesting is, in certain circumstances, getting the most out of your body shouldn't be your main goal of the session. It should be to focus on the strategies of your mind.
Well, I mean, that is a really interesting one, because you do want to get the most out of your body.
Yeah.
But you could learn to do that so it doesn't feel so hard.
Right.
So if you're running a 400 in 90 seconds, can you run it in 90 seconds but make it feel much easier so there's headroom for performance? And right. How could you do that? So it's kind of reliability that you can confidently deliver the performance, which might feel physically quite difficult, but what you're trying to do is build in techniques where such as trying to get a rhythm going, such as being relaxing your arms, trying to run to all sorts of things that might be going on into where you put your mind, so it's not push harder, push harder, push harder.
Yeah. Okay.
As the go-to mindset for each set.
That's why I think strides are good, because when people do strides, it's in their head, they always think strides are going to be easy. And then say, for instance, they do 300 strides and they're running 50 seconds. They're thinking, oh, that's what... So when they got 300 session, they think, oh, well, I can easily beat 50. So when they're running 45, they're thinking, oh, so it's mentally, it makes them feel good.
Yeah.
And strides are... multiple short bursts of exercise, when any sport, are a brilliant way of building confidence and building technique and building strength, and which allow. So doing loads of strides with enough rest, it doesn't have to be much, the first bit's always good form. And when you look at most runners, certainly most that they don't do enough running where they're doing good form.
Right.
And all the strength gains from technique comes from all of that is really good. And at some point in that rep, it goes, my form is deteriorating as I get a bit tired, which allows a beautiful opportunity to work on your mind to go, actually, I will try to hold good form.
Right. Yeah?
300 metres, well, you'll get to that back bend as you go round. and then the last 100. And if, especially if you do it in a group, and you can do it in mixed ability groups, and this can be really good fun, where you put the fastest right at the back and in the outside lane, and as you and you get everybody to line up at about 60 metres to go at different speeds, and it's very good fun. But you then you try and concentrate in good form, which is really good psychological training, because you're so concentrated on your technique and on technique and getting the best out of yourself, but for the least amount of effort. And as opposed to, I'm going to smash every session, everyone as hard as possible.
Yeah.
And work, you know, measure a heart rate, so I've got to get to heart rate X.
Yeah.
Which does have a physiological effect, but the performance effect of going as really fast, but it's there might not be that physically hard, is really important.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that pays off, because when runners go into races rested, that feels different to much of their training, because they're not used to performing that speed without feeling so tired. So often push a bit harder or get a bit tense about some of their performance, and they get a different sort of fatigue. It interrupts them.
Okay. Because I work here with a Dutch coach, and he's very much like the sessions we do together they're 10 seconds slower than sessions I'd normally do here in sort of per kilometre. And he tells you off if you go too fast. He says, I don't want you to go fast. I want you to focus on the smoothness of your running and being relaxed. Interesting concept.
It is.
I'm also like, I had a look over your website, and there's various references to mental toughness. Are you able to give that a definition, and particularly in terms of running?
Yeah, mental toughness in the academic sense and mental toughness in the lay is slightly different. I mean, for my mind, it's all about getting into a difficult situation and being able to persist through that in the pursuit of your goals.
Yeah.
People who are mentally tough can get anxious, but learn to overcome it. People who are mentally tough get near the end of a marathon and keep going and get to the end.
Yeah.
And so it's in that context and it fits with runners very well, in the idea that a lot of their training is actually developing mental toughness. Sometimes it's to get out the door in the first place, and sometimes it's about anticipating the very difficult parts in the last part of the event.
Yeah.
I think mental toughness as a concept to people connect to, because they understand it's hard, and therefore overcoming getting to the end of a marathon is a demonstration of mental toughness. And if you've demonstrated that, you should feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
So it works with me to try and help people feel good about themselves when they've done something which is difficult, and they've had to push themselves through dark moments where they didn't really mind switching themselves off, and a way of helping people be positive when they've done something which is difficult, which many people seem to struggle. Well, I know we did a very nice study where we looked at the self-talk of runners, and a lot of runners were very, very, very self-critical.
Right.
Yeah. I think people forget the good stuff quickly.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
I get all of that, but learning to recognise that was actually pretty good, and recognise that you might not have got the goal you wanted to, but there might well have been good reasons for that.
Yeah.
I mean, just on that, you followed some of the social media post London Marathon this year about people not achieving their time-based goals. And if you didn't know the weather, you'd think that they'd done terribly. But it was boiling. Boiling.
Yeah.
I mean, they should have wore extra jumpers in training.
Well, I did London, and 4 weeks before London, we did a 20-mile race in the snow.
Wow.
The snow.
Yeah.
You know, we're in the gym all the time because it was impossible to run outside. But, I mean, that was such a shock. And I mean, anyone who's gone to a hot country has gone out for their first run on the day, and they've gone, boy, I can't move. And then about 5 days later, they go, yes, I can cope now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you had the first day of holiday in a hot country, and it was just it's always going to be difficult.
Yeah.
They'll be so disappointed and not giving yourself leeway for that.
Yeah.
Really unfair on themselves.
And so do you think, like, in terms of, like, strategies then for improving mental toughness, one is being kind to yourself, I guess. Is that your main takeaway?
Well, it's knowing when you've got to demonstrate mental toughness and knowing when you're in the act of doing so.
Right.
And then replaying those and knowing how well you got onto it. So when it got tough, in any run, and you just and you found a way of, in essence, giving up, then, and then later on you feel really bad that you, you gave on that, because that goal was, you said to yourself, was really important, and that's that that's not very good for you, because it's your self-esteem is not going to be very is not going to be kept together. But if you've got to a very difficult part and you've run, you've kept going and you've pushed as hard as possible, and the performance wasn't at the right speed, but you unpack what was going on, you reflect how well you performed, you couldn't really do that much more, and you pushed, you'd have to say, well, that was as good as it can get.
Yeah.
And so that your demonstration of mental toughness, it wasn't that you that you weren't strong in those cases, that you there were other reasons that you needed to get you quicker. Maybe the different tactics around, you know, running in, into wind, but maybe slowing down a bit, going up to hills. You know, you can demonstrate mental toughness going up hills by running as hard as possible, but be really exhausted at the other end.
Yeah, as a consequence.
And, you know, some of the, I mean, again, I think runners could think about some of the decision makings around tactics to make the run a bit better. And not, it's not always necessarily about going as hard as possible. You know, a lot of skill-based stuff can be gained from running fast downhill.
Yeah.
Many runners are not so good at. I know, and I've done many. I did a 20-mile at Belper in Derbyshire once.
Yeah.
And I remember going at the start, and it was a really steep hill, and I thought, why isn't everyone running? So I was running up this hill really hard. And we ran up for about 10 miles of uphill, mainly uphill. And then I realised why these people weren't doing it, and why they, because they seemed to be really relaxed. We then started going downhill. And I was just being passed by people who seemed to be flying. I thought, my God. I mean, it was. The technique was amazing. And they were just falling down these hills. I don't know what speed per mile, but I thought, well, I am not skilled at downhill running.
Yeah,
Sean's a good downhill. Sean, you're a good downhill
runner.
That's
my only skill now, downhill running. I'm too stupid. I just run at it. I'm quite interested. Like, you talked about kind of like decision making being quite an important skill, and another thing you mentioned is about being aware that you are going through a difficult period, and I'm really like interested in being. People talk about mindfulness and being aware of what's going on in your body, and that's really, I think that's a skill, that's quite a difficult skill to have and to gain. Do you think, how, again, I guess it's a matter of dealing with this in training, but do you have any strategies for being more in the moment when running? Does that make sense?
What you can do is, and is you can reflect back on your previous performances and then start pulling out these negative thoughts and bits where you're turning it on.
Yeah.
And turning on the negativity. And things like the Strava and the other parts where people have got their runs now and they can drag them back and they can see the speed going on. And that actually prompts a recall of what thoughts are going on. So it does allow replaying it of what's going on. And things like Strava, you have the flybys where you can, people are passing it. You can make note of that.
Yeah.
And then you go, okay, well, that was at that point I was being negative, turning myself off. Well, what could I have done? Well, you can't control the performance of others. So, so you've got to take some rational thinking to what's going on. What could I have done at that moment? And how hard was it? And within that, you would start making decisions about what the best thoughts were going to do. And if it's really hard, then you might say, well, actually, I need to focus really narrowly on the here and now and start setting goals around, let's get through the next 30 seconds, next minute or so. You're going up a big steep hill and you can see it going to the top. You can chunk that down into short parts.
Yeah.
And so you break it down to short bits and then you go for the next 3 minutes, the next 30 seconds, I will concentrate on loose arms.
Yeah.
If that's quite difficult, then you might want to count. So you start counting as a way to try and get a rhythm, so you get smoothness in counting, which is not too different to music, but then gets a rhythm to do it. Some people find that really quite useful to count, and then to say I'm gonna run hard for 10 seconds, then have 10 seconds where I'm gonna ease off, and then go hard again for 10 seconds. So you engage with the effort periodically at different parts.
Yeah.
So you switch on to the effort. You might want to You know, watch other people's feet as I try and sink in, as I said earlier. Try and get hold of your breathing by focusing on, you know, not breathing from the chest, but breathing from the diaphragm a little bit more to get hold of that.
Yeah.
And it's all sorts of things to try and switch your mind so that your thoughts are very different to what they are on the evaluation of it. Because I think most of the negativity becomes in the evaluation of what you're going to be doing, as opposed to just sticking in there running.
Yeah.
Most of the runners love running. The idea that you hate the running when you actually you like running. Yeah. You're just not running as fast as you think you ought to be. And the other bit to that is you've got some judge about how fast you should be running. And that's really difficult, isn't it? Really, really difficult to say that is the absolute fact you should be doing.
Yeah.
Unless you're on a treadmill, you know, for most times, most runners haven't run the course that much.
Yeah.
So they don't know really what their speed is. I mean, one of the learning parts, I've done Bruton Park, but I think 255 times now.
Yeah.
Is to you know roughly what the variation in performance is around the same effort.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I've done about 130, almost all of them are in a 15 second or 20 second gap.
Wow.
But almost all of them were about the same effort.
Yeah, yeah.
The hardest possible were around the around this thing. You think, well, actually, getting this far out on today when it's windy is just as good as going this speed when it's not windy.
Yeah, yeah.
But the valuation people have is that I did slower than this. Well, it's mean, too mean on yourself.
Yeah.
It's unrealistic. It's too mean on yourself.
Yeah.
And that's a real process for reflecting of what was, you know, was I putting in the effort, and could that have shifted if that was the effort? And
yeah, that was you, that was an interesting.
It is what it is. It's as hard as it can be. You can't, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, there was an interesting Ali Dixon we interviewed a long, long time ago, and she was saying about she doesn't do much based on much training based on distance, because she knows that one day is going to be different to another. It depends on what mood she's woken up in, whether she's feeling great, whether she's eaten a good dinner the night before. It's all very, very relative, really. There was one thing I wanted to kind of... We talked about kind of coping in a race, and I'm conscious of the time, really, but I looked a lot at the website, and obviously there were some videos about dealing with penalties that you were involved with. And obviously we're going to go out on penalties in a few days' time in the England team. We love going out.
Will we get knocked out, you mean?
Yeah, we love them. Yeah, they're brilliant. Yeah,
positive at this point. They might not go to penalties. And we can I think you can be reasonably confident that they have practiced penalties.
Yeah, yeah.
Now.
You think so?
Football is an interesting one, where you know, years ago they said you can't practice them. And you can't practice under pressure. And you absolutely can get there, can't you? It's that, you know, rarely in football does a player have one kick and everything's on it.
Yeah.
But in other sports, so if you said to Andy Murray at Wimbledon, right, you know, you're likely to be on a second serve, and there's going to be pressure on it, like might be match point against you. Can't practice that, can you? And you go, well, of course you can.
Yeah.
Andy Murray's serve, in what he will do, be so grooved in that you can put as much pressure on him as he's like.
Yeah.
And it's been pretty consistent for all tennis players. So it's really overlearned from the whole process, from the bounce to the throwing up, to what you're concentrating on. It's the controlling the controllables, the physiological state. So you've practiced those until your movement and your confidence in your movement delivers what you want.
Yeah. And so then taking that to running then, so how could we, I guess, we're doing that very thing, we're running every day, we're putting ourselves in a situation. What else can we do really to be ready for that pressure situation?
Yeah, well, I mean, the runners, the best bit is to get through is to learn to manage the start part, because where nerves are, for most runners, nerves will have their most destructive effect by going off too quickly.
Yeah.
So it's anticipating that you might be nervous, anticipating that the consequences of that are running too hard, and set a goal around how you're going to manage that.
Right.
So we talked about running your own race, and there's a lot of talk about running not to a watch. Well, at the start of a race where you might want to say, I can't judge the pace very well because I'll be a bit nervous and I'll be, there'll be, and all the others will, is you could use a watch. As long as you're not getting boxed in for most runners in mass participation events, then they could pace themselves off. Watch watching over the first 10 minutes of a marathon could save the race because they run at the speed that they intended to.
Yeah.
And the strategy of just watching the watch, which I think in the longer terms of the marathon is really not good because you should concentrate on your running. But at the start, when you're really nervous, it gives you something to look at and something to follow. And if you are looking at the watch and it's telling you that you're running at 5 30-minute miles, and you're not likely, and you are like, and you're likely, and your goal is to do sub-4, then it might be too quick.
Yeah.
And so on. So you put yourself under pressure. Look how you react under pressure, and from that, get some behavioural tips to how you can manage that. And often it's around pace for mass participation runners. Yeah, for mass participation runners.
Yeah.
But it's in running, it's controlling the controllables. Keep it in all sorts, controlling the controllables. But it's coming up with a thinking plan of how you're going to approach that.
Yeah. Fantastic. So we've got a few more questions. We could carry on talking all morning, but we've got three final questions to ask. And I think Jermaine might have an extra question as well. He always tries to throw a curveball in there. Our three questions are, if you could be running anywhere right now, where would it be?
Yeah, I thought about this one. We went running in 2002 on the top of a glacier on a ski slope.
Wow.
And that was inspirational. And we went with the GB biathlon team, and they went skiing, and we went running around the top. If running in the French Alps in the summer is awesome.
Yeah.
At altitude, and that is really spectacular. Failing that, there's millions of runs in places like New Zealand where we've been lots of times, which you can run on coastal paths. There's beautiful scenery.
Yeah.
So for that sort of run where you can just go, it's nice here to run.
Yeah.
Warm enough weather is outstanding.
Fantastic.
And so somewhere like that.
So
I saw the question and I've been thinking about that all day.
How do you spend your relaxation? The number two question is, how do you spend your relaxation time? Can you recommend a book, film, or podcast? Or, book, film, podcast, anything basically our listeners can get involved with.
Yeah, well, what our family do is we watch a TV program or each night around, just so that we aren't all on Facebook and social media. So we're currently watching Walking Dead. Which is quite exciting.
Yeah,
it's good. I like that.
Yeah. Breaking Bad. We're at series 8 now of Walking Dead.
Wow.
I haven't convinced my wife to be more like Michonne yet. She hasn't got the big axe on the back of her, but I think for many people, get the family together around a group activity. I think that's really good, and it gets us all together. So that was what we do.
Excellent.
Other than that, my kids are in their 20s now, so it's
hard to get them together.
Still, they're grown-ups.
The third question is, what is the most inspirational running performance in history, in your opinion?
That's a really, really difficult one. I mean, there's loads. I thought of Paula Radcliffe's world record marathon running. I went back to the 70s of Lassie Veeren in the 76 Olympics. That was quite inspirational. You can think of Roger Bannister, but I think this will win the cheese things. When my wife wanted to do a sub-4 to qualify for London, it was almost as if she had to run 8 5K PBs based on her time.
Wow!
And she took to training by doing the long runs really seriously, really, and eventually did it at Abingdon. And I saw her quite late on with stuff. So I think as a determined performance, that of really sticking to a goal and being mightily impressed, I'd say Helen Lane's run at Abingdon.
That's going to be extra love tokens tonight, boy.
My wife, right, she did the Thunder Run on her own, she did it a couple of times. She said, yeah, I'm doing it. I won't do very well. And she did 120K.
Oof, that's amazing.
She says, and I say, that's brilliant. And she goes, oh, but I walk quite a bit of it.
What the
hell? I said, 120-kilometre run is impressive.
Yeah.
It's not flat. It's not. It's up and down, lumpy run.
Yeah. Wow.
But I think her sub four was truly, truly, truly inspirational, because it meant overcoming. It meant really pushing yourself the whole way from start to finish.
Fantastic. And Jermaine, what have you got for us?
I've got two questions.
Go.
So on a serious question. Okay. If you could have anyone in your lab, any like famous runner, who would you want in your lab?
I know my Dan Robinson, our PhD student, would have Kipchoge.
Yeah.
Okay.
In there straight away.
Yeah.
And then on a less serious note, what is the funniest thing that's happened in the lab? Like anyone shitting themselves or, you know, that sort of stuff?
I'll tell you, I mean, the number of... The number of people who have fallen off is quite good. I've fallen off a few times. It's quite spectacular. As an undergraduate, I took part in everybody's study, did the sodium chloride bicarbonate testing, all those things. I fell off a few times when they cranked up the either the speed or the hill. We tested some professional footballers. This was quite funny, and. They had to give their perceived exertion, and they weren't that fit.
Really?
And they were, and I'm all saying this quietly so no one hears.
I know you're whispering. I'm like, wait, okay.
And what happened is, as it's still quite slow, and we did say to them, well, what you don't want to do is be slower than the 50-year-old standing in the back there. And you saw that the perceived exertion go from, this feels okay, so this feels catastrophically hard in about 1 kilometre per hour.
Really?
I'm not telling I'm tired. I'm not saying I'm tired to everyone. As they all look round, and all of a sudden, bosh, they were being fired off the back end of the treadmill. That's quite nice. But that was a few years ago. It was a few years ago.
I'm trying to think now of players that could have been in the Wolverhampton area during that period.
Let's hope they're not in the England squad, yeah?
we'll see how we go with England. I think, yeah. There we go. Always go. I always have such hope. The England soccer team.
Yeah.
There was such hope. I always think that they, in terms of comedy, you think, you know, they talk about the camp being boring. I think, I don't know, why don't they just book a comedian to go and turn up each night and book some entertainment?
Yeah, yeah, keep it
Give
fun.
Them something to do. I mean, you would never go, the idea, the press talk about them, they should be concentrating on the game.
Yeah.
Well, no one else does at work.
No.
They need to be relaxing and doing something interesting, and they'll all be on the computers, but it could be really boring otherwise.
Yeah. That's why the Gaza story in 1990 of him playing American tourist at tennis was like really funny. Didn't he play a doubles match on his own and stuff? I love Gaza.
And report Capello's reign when Kentucky Fried Chicken's been lobbed over the prison wall called their training camp.
Oh yeah, because they weren't allowed anything in. He kept telling them they were fat.
Anything in, but how do you stop a multi-million pound footballer being able to smuggle Kentucky Fried Chicken through the walls? The delivery people must have been on good tips that week.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, we better let you go, Andy. Back to work. But it's been fantastic to talk to you. And if we'll try and put a link through to the research for runners to get involved with the Resist study, we'll be interested to find hear about the results to that. But thanks a lot for joining us.
Lovely. Thank you.
So that was a good interview there from Andy, some useful tips for us, and obviously try and go and help him out with that research. It'd be interesting to see what comes of that. So Jermaine, thinking about training the mind, like, have you kind of got any tips or anything you're taking away from that interview or just some general practices you're going to follow?
So before, if you said training the mind, I would think, just visualise the race. You know, that's training the mind.
Yeah.
But after talking to him, there's stuff that he said about training the mind that we've probably done
that we didn't realize is training the mind.
Yeah.
You know, like digging deep, when you're tired, don't think negative thoughts, think positive thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, like things like that. So you think, oh, you just do it rather than, okay, that's training the mind.
Yeah. Like you say, like we go out and when we're running, we'll be thinking on a long run, often I'll do long runs for a marathon. I'll be running hard in the second section just to practice. And I'm looking at it more at running, how to maintain pace on tired legs. But also, I'm not realizing, but in effect, I'm also training my ability to concentrate while tired. So, like you say, we have been doing these certain things, but I think having a renewed focus on them as a method of mind training is quite an interesting way of looking at it, I think.
And I did do one thing, like, so what I would do on my warm up, I tried to think of all the good sessions I had, and then I even got like a little video.
Yeah.
So that you do videos of your training or your best training stuff.
Yeah.
Or you look at your PB sessions before, you know, like before you do your warm up.
Yeah.
And that just makes you happy.
Yeah. Okay. So this puts you in a good frame of mind.
So you're in a good frame of mind when you're doing warm up, thinking, oh yeah, remember I did that session, I smashed them. When I did that tempo, yeah, I was PB, you know, like things have been going really well. So, you know, like you just do that in your warm up. So you're releasing good energy chemicals.
Yeah.
All that good shit, yeah, you know, in your warm up.
Yeah. I like that. I think the power of positive thinking is just huge. And I think for years I've been really negative about my running, and like it's difficult to break out of that spiral. So I want to be running at my best. Both of us have had great years before. We're not quite at the same stage, but if you dwell on that and if you go into anything negatively, you've got no hope of success. I've been really, like, post races, most races, I think in the last 4 years, I reckon, I've gone out after a race and been like, that could have been better, that could have been shit. I didn't do that very well. And like Andy said, like, if your feelings are always of negativity about your running, then it's never going to go well. You've got to, like, I like to see talk about, like, after a race, look it back, analyze what happened, think about situations that could have gone better, praise yourself for certain situations you do well, and then you know then in the next race what you need to focus on. Like, I know you didn't work, you had a struggle 4 or 5K in, you know that you lost a bit of focus, you know the next time, right, that's when I'm going to really, really focus and concentrate on what I'm doing. So I think analysing your running is a good thing, but you've got to be positive about it. You've got to, like, you know, say, have that good mental energy, good vibes is the only way you're going to succeed. So we should pat ourselves on the back a bit more, Jermaine. Be happy about where we are and what we're doing. And
also, you know, like when he was saying he was doing that, the tests where he was giving them false information.
Yeah.
Even if it's positive or negative. I was thinking, well, if that's the case, people should just set their targets lower. So if they set their targets lower.
Yeah.
So when they get to their checkpoints in the marathon, you know, for the first couple of months, they're always going to be ahead.
Yeah,
they will feel more relaxed, you know, think, okay, things are going to plan.
Yeah, probably some use in that. And I think also is acting. I think this is one of the things that the podcast said to me, not podcast, the training app that I've got. It said, act your way confident. Because, like, there's no way, like, coming to a marathon, right? I've run some good marathons, but I haven't run what I wanted to. So I can't go in there with loads of confidence, like, I'm definitely going to go here and run 220. Do you know what I mean? I can't go in with that confidence.
Yeah.
So the only way I'm going to get that confidence is by doing that, by running 220. Or the other way I can do it is to act my way confident. And the more you act confident, the more you say to yourself, oh, I'm going to go through this 5K in 17 minutes. Or, like, whatever, do you know what I mean? That's the bad example. But if you act yourself, oh yeah, I'm gonna do this. Yeah, I'm fine. I've got no trouble doing this. Even if you don't actually believe it, the more you say it to yourself, the more you do believe it.
There's a bad side to that, because if you're acting, saying you're going to do something, and then it doesn't work, there's going to be a big downside when it all goes bad.
Like, it'd be the same impact if you don't act confident and it goes wrong. I'm not talking about going around bowling around to everybody going, I'm a 220 runner, I can easily do this. I'm just talking about your inner confidence. It's like every time you talk about it, say, yeah, I'm going to do this. I know I can do it. I know my training's gone well. This is going to happen. Even though perhaps you're thinking, yeah, oh my God, 320.
You've done that. I've done that in races. So thinking, okay, I know I can run 337. I know I can run 335. Yeah. You don't tell people, you know, you can run it, and then you don't run it. Then you're more hard on yourself because you think, I knew I could do it. Why didn't I do it?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
That's why if you don't set your target as high.
Yeah.
You're not as disappointed, and it's a bit more realistic because probably all athletes fall under the same category as setting their target as if everything goes completely right.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, I agree with that. So, yeah.
Maybe set it a bit lower as a buffer, thinking, okay, this is what I want to do, but if I could run that, that would be amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Like having a series, people like to have a tiered goals, don't they, about their target? So let's say, yeah, I think I'm probably going to run around 225, let's say. Let's just take a marathon example. 225.
Yeah.
If everything goes well, I would love to run 220, but 225. And you might know that really you're in 222 shape, but you're giving yourself tiered goals. So when it comes through, you know, yeah, that's all right. I'm happy with that. And I think,
I did this yesterday. Like I was doing a run, I'll run back from work.
Hmm.
And I was like, it should take me, because I know I've done it in an hour, but I just said to people, well, it'd probably take me an hour and 10 to run back.
Yeah.
And then when I'm running back, I was thinking, oh, I won't make it an hour, which I wanted to, but I'm definitely going to be an hour and 10.
Yeah.
And I did it an hour and 5.
Yeah.
So it was like, because I gave myself an hour and 10 target, I knew I could get that. So it kept me motivated all the way.
Yeah. And so that's a good thing to think about, is not being hard and fast or anything, and just going out. Being positive, I think, is one thing I take from him, and looking positively and reviewing your race, seeing what you could have done differently, but having a generally positive attitude about your progress. It is fun after all. Not being hard and fast about rules. So like you said, having like a tiered goal. So don't think about, I've got to do 220 or I've got to do whatever. Having various goals more realistic for you to achieve. And I guess it's just, I liked his thoughts of like in your training to focus on your body and on your mind and putting yourself into situations where you're thinking, oh, there's a conflict between my mind says I want to do this and my body's not letting me, and looking at how your mind reacts to that and how your body reacts. I think that was the three things I think would be really good to try in training.
That'd be good practice, especially the last one.
Yeah.
Mind and body.
Fantastic. Well, we'll wrap up. We've got a few things to talk about. First of all, some annoying stuff with iTunes, and all the old reviews are now gone, but I'm working hard to get those back. But we have had some lovely reviews, which I'm going to read out now.
Bless me.
Here we go. Is there a reference to Jermaine? Here we go. So the first one is from Stowe Strider. He said, love this pod. So superb interviews with some top runners at elite and club level that don't get the acclaim they deserve. Well worth a listen. Thank you, Stowe Strider. Thanks for being a part of the show. And the second one says Real Running. A couple of damn good runners. Thank you very much. I think that title has slipped me by. But we used to be good runners anyway. Blathering away like a pair of daft pals in the pub, and dozens of interviews with the great and good of the sport. Lovely stuff. I like that interview. That review. And that's by JD Weatherspoons. So all I'd say to you is, JD, is you're welcome to listen, but don't be coming around here with those Brexit views that you always spout. We don't want to hear them. We're European right here. So thanks for the review, JD. But yeah, keep your Brexit mouth nose out of us. But yeah, that was good. So some good reviews. Keep them coming in. We'll try and read them out. We won't be rude about you. I promise, on future shows. And hopefully we'll get the old reviews back on the go. Another thing is, hopefully we're going to have, some t-shirts made. So what I'm thinking is they're going to be available to buy on my website. It'd be great if you guys are up for having a t-shirt. We'll do, it's great to support the show, keep us going. Obviously, we do this for free, so it's amazing if you guys would want to support us by buying a t-shirt. I will put on a button on my show notes, so Let's Get Running /podcast. Just if you want, you'd be up for a t-shirt, you can put in your email and a size that you'd be up for and send that back to us, and I'll send you out some designs and stuff that we've got coming up. So that'd be really, really cool. And yeah, I think how much? Well, I can't quite reveal it yet, but it's not going to be that much. It's not going to be like, you know, I'm not ridiculous. I know what I saw. Well, I know it's going to be like a standard running t-shirt price. We've got some Orions based on some RAF.
Is it going to be Nike prices or is it going to be Gola prices?
It's not going to be Gola. I ain't getting Gola. We're going to be about a mid-range running t-shirt, so it's not going to cost you a great deal of money, but it'd be great to have people wearing those. And I thought what'd be quite funny is we'll do like some competitions where we'd have we'll do like an Instagram competition or a Facebook competition where you post your photos of you in your running, let's get running top on a bus. So let's bring that crossover of bus driving and running together. And we'll think of some good prizes for people who post the best bus let's get running t-shirt. So if you talk to a bus driver you get a selfie with a bus driver in the top. If you get a selfie with Jermaine driving a bus, and you basically win. You win the internet. You win the whole internet.
Service.
So something to look forward to there. One thing we should mention is our friends at Ladywell, at Kent AC. Both me and Jermaine are former Ladywell trainers. We both used to train down there when we were a little bit younger. So, a local club. Fantastic event they've got coming up, which is the Ladywell 10,000, which is in September.
September the what?
I think it's September the 1st or 2nd. It is, I'm sorry, I cannot confirm. 1st or 2nd. You can find a lot more about it on the Kent AC website, or it's the Ladywell 10,000. I will put a link on the show notes for that. Again, that's Let's Get Running /podcast and click on this particular show. Great to that 10,000 meter run-in. So it's like Highgate's one we featured recently on the show. Opportunity to run 10,000 metres, pace 10,000 metres. Everybody can come and join in. Last year, they had Katrina Wootton ran the fastest UK time for a woman with 31:45, which is amazing. And there's 100 personal bests across the evening. There's going to be lots going on. Got people.
It's a fairly good windproof track as well.
Oh, that's the beauty of it. Yeah, it's a really good place to go and try and run a fast race. So if anyone wants to get involved, they can have a look at Kent AC's website, Kent Athletic Club, and there is, I will put a link on the show notes to information about that. So entries are open now, so anyone in London that wants to run 10,000 metres on a track, this is a great opportunity. Have a look at that. Yeah, enter. Do it. Lovely. Right, so we're going to try and be back next week, Jermaine, for another show, but we will let everyone know. We will hopefully be moving to a weekly format. I haven't told Jermaine this. I'm springing on him right now, but
wait, weekly, Anna.
We might do. We'll talk about it. We'll let everyone know if that's going to happen. But look out for us. Please subscribe again. iTunes have been horrible to us, so you've got to resubscribe. But we'd love to have you guys listening and subscribing to the show. It helps us grow, and that's great. Right, I'm off.
Oh.
Friday, Spain, Portugal. Let's do it.
No, it's all about Suarez. So me and you are Uruguay fans.
Well, Uruguay, they're lovable. I was going to say they're lovable shits, aren't they, Uruguay? You know we're going to get from they're going to kick you, they're going to bite you, but they're also pretty good at football. So yeah, my kind of team. All right, wicked. See you soon, Jane.
Right. See you, man. Bye.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.